I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines and all the scenes with footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are for the table. The many times we give and rhyme to our quiet dancing able. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm.
All right, we are back. We are back. This is Tuesday Morning Roundtable. This is J.R. Moore. It is Tuesday, the 30th of May. We have with us Dave Hodges. His website's thecommonsenseshow.com. I say again, thecommonsenseshow.com. Jeff Nyquist. His website's jrnyquist.blog. His book's for sale at Amazon. We expect to be joined by Steve Ben Noon at some point in the next few minutes. And we do open lines at 512-248-8252. Well, Dave, Carrie Lake keeps getting stymied at every juncture, it seems like, doesn't she, sir?
Yeah, and I think the Brager report really tells us why. The evidence that she's presented in some cases is just horrific. And I'll give you just one small example of many I could cite. When her opponent, Katie Hobbs, was then the Secretary of State running for governor, she interfered in the election several times, with the latest being two counties said they weren't going to use machine tallies as the only total. They were going to hand count and verify and compare, and Hobbs threatened them with prison if they did that. And then when they refused to certify the election when it was over because of all the problems, she said, you'll go to prison again. And Ron Gould, who was the chairman of Mojave County Board, former state senator, said, under pressure and threat of going to prison, I certify this election. How does she get away with that conflict of interest? You have to have a corrupt judge. And I'll go back and I'll say this again. The Brager report conducted by John Thaler, who does RICO investigations for the government. So this is not a conspiracy venture. This is in his wheelhouse of professional activity is paid for by the federal government. And he said, judges, and this will be the answer to your question, are recruited when they're lawyers with money laundering operations in which the Sinaloa cartels participate with fake mortgage companies, and that's been well established and well validated through the affidavit process and handwriting experts and so forth. It's just the evidence is overwhelming, John. I've reviewed it. And they get these lawyers, and they groom them, and then they position them to get them into judgeships. And this is why you have, in the face of overwhelming evidence, they continue to allow criminal activity to persist. I'll give you just one more quick example. In Maricopa County, 61% of the voting machines in heavy Republican areas failed. 0% in heavy Democratic areas. Okay, who could ever accept something like this? But the judges have no problem with it.
Well, it looks like the I refer to our enemies as the socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, have really focused on your state to take control of all three branches of government, haven't they, Jeff? I mean, Dave.
Yes. We used to think California was the prime example of corruption with elections, and it's bad, but they have nothing on Arizona. My county, Maricopa County, is easily the most corrupt county in America. I'd be hard-pressed to find any different. And I told you the last time I was on your show, at least I think I told you this, that Maricopa County Bill Gates and other election officials that did the fraud in 2020 and 2022 actually met in a meeting sponsored by Mark Zuckerberg in D.C. Laura Loomer busted it. She had it on camera. And they met with election officials around the country. And why would they have to do that? Your elections are state-run.
Right.
Alabama is supposed to be different than Arizona based on what Alabama legislators want versus what Arizona legislators want. So why do they have to meet with all these various state groups for the 2024 election integrity, as they called this conference? It's because they're planning new ways to steal the election, to stay one step ahead of the burning bridge because people are waking up. And the voter fraud's never going to stop. In Arizona, where voter fraud has been so fully exposed, not one meaningful law with voter reform has taken place. Not one. Not one has passed. Yet these legislators ran on platforms of ensuring election integrity. It's not happening.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, do you have an estimate, Dave, how many of the remaining 49 states have similar issues to Arizona, sir?
Well, the Thaler report, we call it the Brager report because Jacqueline Brager presented it, says it's in 26 states, very similar practices in 26 states.
Similar practices.
I've done a cursory examination of some of the other states in the data. It's a 120,000-page document with over 20,000 affidavits. It's overwhelming to go through. I haven't spent much time on other states, John, so I wouldn't be qualified to answer a question. I focused on Arizona.
Gotcha.
And again, I said this before on your show, I don't even need to see the Brager report to know that the Sinaloas launder money, that some state legislators and state officials are involved in this, because I was close to an assassination attempt of a realtor and her boyfriend who were exposing this. I was directly involved with it. In fact, I didn't even know when I showed up to speak at this group that they had actually assigned me police protection because of this attempted murder. And if the murder is being whitewashed right now. It's the guy got caught. He got shot. The assailant got shot in the process. And now the Yavapai County prosecutors, which is basically Prescott, Arizona, are basically reducing the charges to meaningless crap. And they're the same prosecutors that when Hunter Biden was caught at their airport with crack paraphernalia in the backseat of a rental car, they let him go and didn't prosecute him. I mean, this is how corrupt Arizona is. We could literally talk from now till sundown, and I wouldn't be able to cover everything I know about the corruption.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Jeff, your follow-up to Dave's comments, if any, sir.
Yeah, there's a book written in the late 80s by Joseph D. Douglas Jr. called Red Cocaine, The Drugging of America. I think you can find PDFs of it online, but the book is a very important piece of research because Douglas was working with the Czech defector Jan Szena, and the information Szena had been a protege of Khrushchev, and he was one of the top eight officials in communist Czechoslovakia. Czechoslovakia was ahead in all the Eastern Bloc countries in chemical warfare and in chemistry related to the brain. And they had decided, the Russians and the Chinese decided to do an opium war against the United States. Only they realized there were such things as designer drugs and that there were other drugs. They actually studied in the 50s how to launder money through banks, how corruption works. They found Latin America was suitable, but the U.S. had to be further corrupted. In other words, the morals had to be lowered in the U.S. for them to conduct the operation. They started the operation in 1960. It was called Operation Friendship of Nations. They started out with heroin, of course, and marijuana. They ended up going into cocaine after the 1967 tests on American POWs taken to the Soviet Union secretly from Vietnam, that cocaine had a special effect. And so but the main reason for drugs wasn't just to poison us and to corrupt our youth. The main reason was the money laundering and the entry into organized crime that would allow political information. The money laundering allowed for bribery and, of course, acquisition of blackmail on corrupt officials. And that would give them political control here in the United States. That was the ultimate objective. And so when you look at this report, the Brager report, I listened to the lady who gave it. It was in front of the Arizona Senate, was it, that she was in front of?
It was a joint committee called both houses, Election Integrity.
Okay, it was both houses. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one they kicked Liz Harris out. That presentation was why Liz Harris was kicked out of her seat in the House of Representatives.
Right. Yeah, when you realize the extent of these networks, I mean, Douglas was way ahead of his time, and he said, look, the communists are operating these crime organizations. And you go to the, I mentioned the Sidewinder report in Canada, and the Sidewinder report emphasized the Chinese were doing the same thing in Canada. The Chinese triads had actual agreements with the People's Liberation Army and the Chinese intelligence in order to conduct operations in tandem with the Chinese communist intelligence services to take over Canada. So drug trafficking was conceived as a way of entering into a country and getting control of its corrupt politicians. So when I heard this, I thought, oh, this is exactly in alignment with defective testimony and with the research and the knowledge we have of their use of organized crime and drug trafficking. Douglas goes into a strategic analysis based on the Brezhnev Committee, which was the committee that met in 1957 and in 56 to 57 to rewrite Soviet strategy for the hydrogen bomb and the age of Sputnik, you know, the ICBM age, the nuclear war thing. They made a two-track strategy to get ready for nuclear war, but then to prepare this infiltration and this deception strategy where they would create a phony Sino-Soviet split, they would create a fake collapse of communism in Eastern Europe, and meanwhile, they would be taking us over from the inside and preparing to nuke us if we caught them and were able to stop them from taking us over. So they had this two-track strategy. And they actually did studies in the 1950s on organized crime, how to set up their own cartels, and how to take over other people's organized crime. And then you get to the book Lenin's Tomb by David Remnick, which was about the fall of the Soviet Union in the 90s. I think he won the Pulitzer Prize for it, or the Nobel Prize anyway. But he interviewed the head of the Italian Parliamentary Committee of Inquiry into the Mafia. And this guy told him, it's towards the end of the book, he told him that Russia was the capital of international organized crime, and that the three major mafias in Italy, the Sicilian, Neapolitan, Calabrian mafias, were basically working closely with the Russians, and that they actually sent representatives to Russia all the time to be part of seminars on how to coordinate operations. I mean, this is how serious it's gotten. So this is not just coming from some right-wing extremist. David Remnick is on the left and worked in Russia for quite a while. So you have to understand the inner... So this Brager report is completely credible. I mean, for people, I know a lot of people are saying, oh, no, that can't be true. We can't be that corrupt. Our enemies have been working on this for decades.
Right.
And it is true. Totally consistent.
Right. Well, as we sometimes talk about, Jeff, Chinese think decades into the future. And Russians, even though the Russian leadership is Caucasian, they think like Asians. And planning for decades in the future is simply the way they are, isn't it, Jeff?
Well, this is a communist system. They believe that they're taking over the destiny of man and taking over history. They're the midwives of history. And communist ideology teaches them that if they use their understanding of dialectics and materialism, which is what communism is, dialectical materialism, they will then be the guides of humanity, and they can reshape humanity for this wonderful future that Marx predicted was ahead of us. And this is their religion. It is a religion, basically. They don't go to church. They go and they do these elaborate strategies to advance the revolution. And they're committed.
Absolutely.
And communists exist in, you know, we have a communist party here, and it's never had so few members because they all entered the Democratic Party. And of course, they've got the Chinese and Russians have really pushed on infiltrating the Republican Party, using China's trade to compromise businessmen and to get politicians then who are beholden to businessmen for financing their campaigns. So it's a very complex strategy, and it's really succeeding in politically speaking.
All right. Well, Dave, we're getting quite an education here this morning, as we typically do, aren't we, sir?
Yes, absolutely. And Jeff is just really validating a lot of what I'm seeing in Arizona historically. It is the plan to infiltrate, and they've successfully done it in Arizona. You know, we had a deal where Don Bowles was an investigative reporter. This was covered actually on 60 Minutes. And he was investigating illegal land dealings where politicians would buy up land in advance of freeway construction and other construction so they could personally profit. And it wasn't just Arizona politicians. Rumsfeld was involved and some other high-level federal officials as well, too, at the time. And Don Bowles came out of the courthouse with information he was looking up, and his car was blown up. He died 2 weeks later. I actually had his brother as a professor of mine in grad school. And the details were just stunning, but they've shifted their policies. This was, I think, in 1977 when this happened. And it looks to me like they've shifted from corruption using a group they called the Phoenix 40 to now where they're employing the Sinaloas. And I'm having a hard time pinpointing when the Sinaloas came into play, and it might be buried somewhere in that Brager report that's just so massive. Okay, I wanted to ask Jeff. Jeff, do you have any idea when the cartel started to be involved in the money laundering that affects politicians and judges?
Well, Operation Friendship of Nations began in 1960, and they began getting into the Latin America cocaine trafficking around 1970, around the same time the Soros Fund was created in the Netherlands Antilles. The Netherlands Antilles was ground zero initially for the money laundering, because it was, you know, outside the United States and so on. And then the Cubans were brought into this, and they were told to use black street gangs in the American cities to distribute the drugs. And Fidel Castro and his brother Raul, they didn't like this because they didn't trust black people, even though these were black Marxists in the inner cities that they were going to enrich. So Jan Chana was tasked with meeting with Raul Castro and convincing him to partner with the black Marxist gangs in the American inner cities. So that's how they initially got the cocaine trafficking started. The heroin trafficking, which was always a lot smaller operation at the beginning, they had a hard time pushing it. You remember the film The French Connection?
Yes.
It was the Corsican Mafia. Corsican Mafia was one of the first mafias to actually team up with the KGB. And that was in the 60s. But it slowly evolved from there because once you created in the streets in the American cities, once you created a market, once you had the drugs going, heroin, marijuana was considered a gateway drug. If they could get people to start with that, they could move them up to the other ones. That was their thinking. So then the money is the natural need then comes when you have illegal money. You have to launder it in order to use it, because if you use it without, you know, it being laundered, you'll get caught by the IRS, right? People will notice where you're getting your money from, so you have to have an explanation. So once you started then to tempt smaller banks and you work your way up, you find corrupt banking officials in other banks. Once you get officials in banks to start to launder the money, then you basically control the banks through the corrupt officials because you can put them in prison. So they all get sucked into it slowly, gradually. By the time you get to the 1980s, you've got evidence that major banks.
Jeff Wheeler. Yeah.
Your
audio is coming and going there, Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's coming and going, at least at my end.
I hear you guys fine. Yeah, but
I'm hearing Jeff fine too.
Okay.
You've got major banks. By the time you get to the 80s, you got major banks that are laundering this money. And the amount of money by the 80s, you're talking about $300 to $500 billion, up to $500 billion in money laundering. Now, that's a lot of bribery money. And, of course, you've got the Soros Fund. So what does George Soros do with his money? He supports the Democratic Party. He supports the left. He supports these street demonstrators, right? So he's from a communist country. He's from communist Hungary. How does a poor boy from communist Hungary come to the West and become a billionaire? I think he had help.
Absolutely. Well, we have a break. We have Steve Bannoun with us. We'll be right back after the break.
For the first time since its inception, RBN is offering a limited opportunity to you, the listener, to join our quest. You will be provided an effective platform on both internet and satellite broadcasting, and also gain the opportunity to both share your creativity with our producers and voice your message with thousands of patriots. Interested? Call 800-724-2719, extension 3, for details.
Is history about to repeat itself again? I'm Peter Serafin with another Liberty Minute. Three banks have failed in as many weeks. A fourth regional bank saw a stock plummet Wednesday night after news that they were looking to sell. Biden says that no taxpayer money will be used to save these banks. But what Biden fails to acknowledge is that all money is taxpayer money. Sure, the FDIC is funded by payments from the banks, but the banks get that money from their customers, taxpayers. In 1930, the United States was in a recession, not unlike today. Then banks began to fail. Then there was a run on the banks and the Great Depression began. With the fractional reserve banking system that we have today, if even 5% of us took everything out of the banks, the system would crash, just like in November 1930. Keep that in mind when the next bank failure hits the headlines. And use code Lighthouse at protectwithbear.com to protect your legal rights as a gun owner and get free access to training videos. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until next time, Sivus Pashem, Parabellum.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Well, I wish I was in the land of cotton, old town there. I'm not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixie's land where I was born in early on one frosty morning. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. This hour is sponsored by EMP Shield, $50 off each piece of equipment, the exact same equipment the Department of Defense uses to protect their vehicles at thelibertyman.com. This is Tuesday Morning Roundtable. We have with us Jeff Nyquist. His website, jrnyquist.blog, books for sale at Amazon. Dave Hodges, his website is The Common Sense Show. And now we're joined by Steve Ben-Noon. His website is IsraeliNewsLive.org. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, John.
Well, sir, we've got limited time. We've had Dave and Jeff with us since the beginning, and we're going to try to give you as much air time as possible. So you got some updates for us, sir?
I do, and maybe before we start that, I was listening to Jeff there talking about the all this money laundering, and boy is he not accurate on that. And, of course, especially in the 80s, back when I was working with the intelligence wing there, I know that there was an author named Greg Palast. He wrote a book, The Best Democracy Money Could Buy. And I contacted Greg one time because he was working on the all the money laundering going on through power companies, et cetera, Gulf Power, Alabama Power, Georgia Power, And I think there's like some 40-something politicians involved, and they were money laundering, actually drug money, that was coming up. And he actually mentions several key people that ended up having mysterious deaths, like Jay Corton with Gulf Power, the CFO. And I sent him a message one day. I said, would you like me to fill in the blanks for you? You know, that was something that caught his attention. And I said, yes, they are. I said, I know a lot of the politicians involved. But not to get into that right now, but to say this there, President Bush, when he became president in 1991, one of the things that he did was put an end to all those investigations against the power companies in order to protect the politicians. Later, though, the Chinese got involved, and the Chinese began to work with the cartel to find out who all, which politicians were involved. They were giving them big sums of money to disclose the politicians that were involved in that money laundering. And then they ended up working through second and third party channels, making sure that these politicians knew they had the goods on them, so that if they did not cooperate, they would end up blackmailing them in their part with this money laundering operations. Now, hence I say that, John, because the governor of Georgia, oddly enough, and we'll just say alleged for the sake of those that might think this is too conspiratorial, but his family was involved in the operations that were going on with the power company money laundering, allegedly, I'll just say, that ended up, the Chinese were able to manipulate him. So when President Trump, they were counting the ballots in Georgia, that's why you see, as a Republican, he didn't quite go to stand up for the president at that time. So, yeah, there's a lot that could be said. Not that he probably wouldn't have, but he also knew the evidence the Chinese had on him. And, of course, Biden being a good old China guy himself, he had to make sure that he pandered towards the Democratic side in a case like that. So I just figured I'd throw that in there real quick.
All right. Well, that's a good follow-up. Let's go from there, Steve.
Okay, the things that I've been working on with some intelligence people that I know in the Middle East, and we've been discussing a little bit of this to some of the, or I should say some of this to my own surprise as well, when it comes to Iran, Israel, the U.S., and we got into a deep discussion recently because I was wondering why the Saudi prince had snubbed Netanyahu, wouldn't meet with him. We see Iran making a lot of alliances right now, like in the case of the Saudis. Now they're trying to meet with their counterparts in Jordan. And so I talked to one of the intelligence people that I know that's from Iran, and we got into a rather lengthy discussion about this. And I said, why is this happening? And he told me, he said, Steve, let me kind of clarify a few things for you. He said, if Israel and the United States were to attack Iran today, he said, the Iranian people would go into the streets and cheer them on. And he said, that's one thing you have to understand. He said, the people are so disgusted with the government that, he said, they want to see the regime to be changed. He said, they have lived, one, of course, they have created such a impoverished lifestyle for them. He said, whereas if you go back before the U.S. helped overthrow them, and he said, of course, the U.S. actually is the one that helped put the Ayatollah in, but they weren't anticipating that he was going to turn against them.
Right.
He said, so that was unexpected. But he said, that at that rate, he said,
hold on,
that,
Steve. Hold on, Steve. We got a break. We're right back.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
So let's fix bayonets. We'll have the advantage of moving down the hill. They gotta be tired, the Revs. They gotta be close to the end if we are. So fix bayonets. Ellis, you take the left wing, I'll take the right. I want a right wheel forward of the whole regiment.
What, you mean charge?
Yes, but here's what we do. We're going to charge swinging down the hill. Just like we pulled back to this left side of the regiment, now we're going to swing it down. We swing like a door. We're gonna sweep them down the hill just as they come up. Understand? Does everybody understand?
Yes, sir!
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. My website is thelibertyman.com. Check out what's there. There's a lot there, over 9 gigabytes. This is the Tuesday Morning Roundtable with Dave Hodges. His website's The Common Sense Show. Jeff Nyquist, his website's jrnyquist.blog. And Stephen Noon, his website is israelinewslive.org. Let's continue where we left off there, Steve.
Yeah, so what it is one thing he was explaining to me is that, you know, the Iranians were, as far as the Middle East, before all this power struggle had changed, when Iran was more like a Western nation with freedom, is that Iran's economy was second to that of Japan at the time. And he said, and of course, Iran has a massive amount of natural resources. So why, he said, the question came in is why, you know, now the economy is in shambles, everything is falling apart. And so we were coming back to the issue of why is Iran making these alliances, et cetera. And he said, in the case of the Saudi prince, he said, do not mistake the fact that the Saudi prince still hates the Iranian regime just as much and just as passionate as he did before making this agreement. He said, it's not a matter of just snubbing Israel. He said, but what it is that the Saudi prince needs to bring peace in regards to Yemen and to stop this war there, because they have their multi, I guess, trillion-dollar NEOM city that's being built, and they need this to go off without a hitch, and he needs peace in that part of the region of the world. And of course, as we mentioned, as I said to him, that's part of your New World Order plan in the first place. In fact, NEOM is going to be not only a tourist destination and an AI city, but it's also going to be part of what the New World Order will call a tri-state between Egypt, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. And he said, so yes, he said, and don't think he said that Netanyahu doesn't know this as well. He said, you're just seeing words that are being said in the for the public consumption, but in reality, he said, Netanyahu knows very well what's going on and why that alliance is being made. And the other thing is we talked about Iran and the issue of Iran possibly attacking Israel. He said to me, he said, Stephen, he said, look at what has gone on over the years here. He said, even when Israel, he said, more than 100 strikes on Iranian targets inside of Syria. He said, did you ever see Iran directly retaliate for those strikes done on their soldiers inside of Syria? He said, of course, the answer is no. He said, why? He said, Iran is afraid of Israel because they know that they have the backing of the United States. And he said, and of course, if they strike back, everything would come down on them and the regime would be overthrown. And he said, they don't want to be overthrown. But he said, now, will they arm the Palestinians? Will they arm Hamas, Hezbollah in Lebanon, et cetera, or the Houthi rebels, any of those? He said, absolutely they will. They'll give them everything they need. He said, but at the same time, if you're looking at the Palestinians, he said, do you think they really care about the Palestinians? He said, no, they don't. He said, what? Give me one example that Iran has ever helped the Palestinians with infrastructure within their country, helping them financially to create a better way of life for their people. He said, no. He said, but when it comes to giving them bombs to attack Israel on their behalf, yes, they'll give them everything they have need of. So these were some of the things that I just wanted to share there, John, and then maybe somebody would like to comment back on it.
Okay. Jeff, go ahead if you got any feedback on Steve's commentary.
Yeah, I don't know about these intricacies of Middle Eastern politics, but you have these various schemes which people with large amounts of money don't like borders, so they want borders, any obstacle to trade to be gone, so they can trade across borders. And of course, the reason is that that in some countries the labor is cheaper, there's raw materials, and so it makes everything more efficient. This is a chance to make money, to basically make use of the international division of labor, which Adam Smith wrote about. This is how capitalism functions. So what we have going on the one hand is we have the liberal Western capitalist system following its nature, trying to make money, and we've got piggybacking on it, utopian socialists and communists, who want to use it to make the world as one, like in the John Lennon song. But behind that are the communists in Beijing and Moscow who will want to control the world. The difference between the people working for communism and socialism in the U.S. and those in Russia is that the communist in the U.S. wants to disarm his country. The communist in Russia wants to have a decisive advantage in nuclear weapons, and in China too. And that's a very important distinction because it shows intent, and it shows the kind of the direction that all of this, the communist movement has been taking all this time.
Dave, any response before we get to our next caller?
Interesting report by Steve. I think I would look at the fact I'm reading that the U.S. is building a permanent base in northern Syria. And the first thought I had was, are we preparing to attack Syria? And the Biden administration, I think, wants a nuclear war with Russia. That's real clear to me. And if we attacked Iran from Syria, would this bring Russia into it, and would we have a nuclear war?
All right, let's get to this caller here. We got Teddy in Hawaii. Good morning, Teddy.
John, good morning. Good morning, John. Thank you for the discussion we had last Wednesday on the Greek Battle of Crete and their resistance and on to the Nazi invasion. I'm happy to talk to Steve, and I just had a question for him. I have Israeli friends, very, very close friends, and I hear there's a lot of readiness and anticipation of possibly a strike against Iran. I know that cannot really be talked about much, but how long can Israel wait for Iran to develop their nuclear weapons? And what do you think about the jockeying for friendships and Saudis turning to Iran and things like that? I mean, how will that affect that if Israel has to move, and will they have to move on their own? Because will America help Israel in that case?
Go ahead, Steve.
Actually, he cut out on that last part. Could you just repeat that last part for me?
Yes, my question is, how long can Israel wait to take out the nuclear threat of Iran, which they seem to be imminent on developing their own nuclear weapons? Iran is preparing, and they would strike Israel, they have said. How long can Israel wait?
Okay, here's the one thing that, and we've mentioned, I think, this before. You may have not have heard it before. Iran is already a nuclear power. They've been a nuclear power for years. In fact, we give them ourselves under Obama's administration. We actually gave them tactical nukes ourselves. But there was actually one of their scientists that defected to the U.S., worked on the nuclear program. He's the one that actually disclosed that Iran does have nuclear weapons already. They don't have quite the delivery system to go like over to the U.S., but they do have it to get it through Israel. And that has been confirmed to me both by American intel as well as Israeli intel, that they very well know that they are a nuclear power. But at the same token, Israel is not just going to wait, and Israel will take them down. But I personally feel like that Israel taking Iran down is more, not so much as for the threat of, you know, the nuclear threat that they pose, but because if you're going to create a global system, a one system there, they need control of Iran for the flow of goods that will go from China with the One Belt, One Road initiative there. And so that's part of why you'll see them take them down. And Biden has already, and his administration has already agreed to work with Israel for a preemptive strike on Iran, and he is going to use the same plan that Trump had initiated initially to go against Iran.
Okay, very, very good.
John, I have a question I'd like to ask Stephen real quick. Stephen, do you find any significance in the creation of a permanent U.S. base in northern Syria along these lines?
I do, Dave. I believe that, like you had mentioned earlier, there is, you know, there's so much push to take down Russia. And, of course, Boris Johnson, when he came to, you know, I was actually thinking it was the U.S. that it was the one that made Zelensky back off on this peace plan that was being brokered by Israel between Russia and Ukraine early on, which later was confirmed by Naftali Bennett. But it was actually Boris Johnson that came in and said that. He said, no, you're not going to make a peace agreement. You're going to keep on fighting. The thing is, there's two objectives they have. One, in order to bring, and this is your globalist elite that are pushing this, but they want to bring the U.S. down. They want to force Russia to a nuclear strike on us. And the only way they figure they're going to do it is to go in and attack Russia directly, force their hand to do so. But, you know, I had an economist on recently on our program, and he made a very interesting statement. He said, you know, he said, we always refer to different aspects of war as a theater of war. He said, if you think about it, if a war is a theater, he said, then it's definitely got actors in order to carry out the agenda. And he said, these wars, of course, are steered and geared for global economic strategy and for whatever purpose they have in mind for that. So it's not just that we have wars to have them because somebody hates the other guy. It really comes down to the economic side of things.
Okay. Let's go on from there. Jeff, any updates on the conflict between the real Jews and the Moses bloodline and the make-believe Jews from Southern Europe, and what's going on with the COVID clot shots and the attempt to eliminate the real Jews?
I don't understand. You're talking to Steve, not
I mean Steve. I meant Steve. Yeah, I meant Steve.
I don't have. I've been having a very difficult time, John, trying to get further information on this. Once they give me that one dump of information that we shared originally, they've been kind of tight-lipped about it. And I think the reason being, John, is because those people that are over the hospitals, that are over that aspect of it, they're getting a little bit antsy about revealing those things because of the fact that it's not hard for the Israelis to figure out who's disclosing that information. And I think that's the reason why they kind of clammed up a little bit on it and a little bit more hesitant. Because there's, like, in this case here, especially when it comes to the children, there's only one hospital with one head of that hospital, which is where I initially got some of this information from, that if it were to be disclosed again, they know they would know who it is.
Right, right. Well, we always need to protect our sources, don't we, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, within those guidelines and parameters, I know you'll do what you can, because what I've been saying for about a year is Israel as we know it will cease to exist in 3 to 5 years. There'll still be an Israel, but it won't be the Israel we've always known, will it, Steve?
No, it will not, John, and I agree with you 100%. And they're going to take... There is this push with the elite there to have an attack done against Israel. And I think that the other part is, and this is why I think they tried so hard to get Iran to do a strike in retaliation, so they have more reason to justify that war. And because Iran has not been cooperative in that, the other aspect is just going to be that, let's take and... we'll just have to say that Iran is supplying all the weapons, which they are, to Hezbollah, to the different fighting factions that are striking Israel, and that eventually that's going to be the justification, or in the case of always saying that Iran is on the verge of creating a nuclear weapon, we have to take them down for that purpose there. Somewhere along the way, though, I have a feeling that even if it comes down to doing a falsified attack to justify a war, that may end up being in the cards, which is really sad, because that means Israeli people pay the price for a very crooked regime. And when I say regime, that's not necessarily saying Netanyahu per se, but whatever elites that are controlling that in the background, that's saying that they're willing to do whatever it takes to justify this in order to bring about a global change on this planet. And by the way, John, that does hinge around the binary system coming, all kinds of things. This is why you're seeing so many wars take place right now. Everything is being expedited in order to get everything ready so that when things do change, they've got a new system in place. You know, as the old saying goes, out of the chaos, see, is when they bring that out.
Well, the binary system, of course, refers to Planet X, which I'll be talking about that when I'm speaking in Des Moines, Iowa, the second weekend of August. Back to the clot shot. Israel has one of the highest percentage of people that got the COVID vaccination on the planet. And we've seen a dramatic increase in people dying in this country. But in a small country like that, the... deaths have to be more public, and since everybody knows everybody, isn't there more attention being brought to this matter in Israel just because of the country being so small and people knowing each other?
Well, you know, John, that's an interesting point right there, because I know that some of the people in the intelligence community that I know over there have really are so angry with their own government because they know they've been duped. But yet, because of their positions and stuff, they can't really say a whole lot. And then, Israel may like to, stand up and tell the world that they're a democracy, they've got freedom, but it's not quite to the standard like in the United States here. We have a far more freedom of expression than what you do in Israel. You start trying to express things like that in Israel, you could end up getting locked up real quick.
Hold that thought. We'll take no more calls. We will have a summary from each of you gentlemen after the break. We'll be right back.
John Moore's private consultations are the most comprehensive services available any place, anywhere in the world. They're available now and provide valuable knowledge and information that protects an individual, family, or group. We provide clarity, focus, and information for you and your associates for any situation. We have just the right knowledge, just the right information from just the right professionals. Schedule your consultation for your family or group now. Contact us at thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. Once again, thelibertyman.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Don't become dependent on the medical system. Get and stay healthy naturally with Extendivite. Metals in the liver cause peroxides to get dumped into the bloodstream. Peroxides do more damage than free radicals to the arteries, and the LDL has no protection from peroxides, causing the LDL to get stuck in the arteries, creating a potential blockage. Extendivite slowly chelates the metals away from the liver so it can dispose of what was meant to be a harmless process, peroxide. Extendivite's seven herbs has a job to strengthen the organs and circulatory highway. Can you afford a heart attack? Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
But I'd like to ask each of you what it is you value so highly that you are willing to fight and possibly die for. We will call that Texas. The Mexican army hopes to lure us into attempting escape. Almost anything seems better than remaining in this place, penned up. If, however, we force the enemy to attack, I believe every one of you will prove himself worth 10 in return. We will not only show the world what patriots are made of, but we will also deal a crippling blow to the Army of Santa Ana.
If anyone wishes to depart under the white flag of surrender, you may do so now. You have that right.
But if you wish to stay here with me in the Alamo, we will sell our lives dearly.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We'll start with Dave giving his summary, one minute, 90 seconds or so. Go to Jeff and then wrap it up with Steve. Go ahead, Dave.
My big takeaway from today is that there are multiple fronts. Any one of them could just trigger. Very, very concerned. And then I would add to the fact that the list of corruption in America County is still growing exponentially. And then finally, I don't claim to be an Oklahoma City expert, but I will say this. Ammonium nitrate can cause lots of trouble. Not much of it was unaccounted for, unacceptable. Take that in the words of DHS, not myself. So that's my takeaway for today. Things aren't getting better. America needs to ask themselves what they're.
Roger that. Thank you, Dave. Jeff, your summary, please, sir. You're on mute there, Jeff.
Well, we heard from Dave about corruption in Arizona, the election corruption, the Sinaloa cartel's involvement, organized crime, drug trafficking. Basically, was all anticipated by Joe Douglas's book, Red Cocaine, written in, I think it was 87 was the original publication date, or 88. And people should go and they should study that book, because it's about a strategic use, you could call it chemical warfare, of drug trafficking and organized crime to assist in the advanced setting up of terrorist networks, of taking over, subverting the United States government, of corrupting the CIA, the FBI, and politicians at every level. And so this is not some fantasy. This is something that's been, this is scholarship. He's got massive numbers of footnotes. He cites congressional investigations and other investigations. And he's not the only one. Claire Sterling has written about the KGB's involvement in terrorism and how this connects with networks, crime networks as well. So that's my.
Okay, well, thank you, Jeff. And Steve, go ahead, sir. Oh, well, we're out of time. Sorry.
That's all right. No problem.
That's
y'all
okay.
Have a good one.
Okay, guys. Have a great day. We'll see you all next Tuesday. That's it for today. Medical supplies, energy, clean, essential oils. Now, while you can, your firearms, ammunition never, ever gets done. Please have a fun, safe, productive day. God bless my beautiful county of Crawford County, Missouri, the beautiful state of Missouri. I get to live. Large, give a tip to Texas. Lord, please God bless the United States of America.
Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.